All right, this is Centaur Views. My name is No Sense.
And this is Victoria.
This is a podcast where two Sagittarius people come together and give their opinionated views on cultural topics.
Disclaimer, you will be offended. Don't at me. Welcome to this week's podcast. This is Centaur Views with Victoria.
And No Sense.
Make sure you like, share, and subscribe to our podcast on Spotify and Anchor. We're still working on getting on Apple Music, so thank you for being patient with us.
So, as usual, we're going to go into our two cents that we do before our regular show. So, Victoria, what do you have this week?
My two cents is I did not want to do anything about Corona because we've done that for the past two episodes.
Yeah, we're not going to say the C word this week.
But this is the effects of the C word, quarantine. I think I maybe disclosed on our last episode that I'm single now and I am entering the dating scene. So I signed up for Facebook dating and, I had a guy ask me to come over to his place for a game night and I've only like said hello to him. So I was like, nah, let's meet in a public space. And then it dawned on me that we can't go any fucking where. Yeah, we can't go out to eat. We can't go to the bar. Can't go putt-putting. Can't go to the Dave and Buster's. So I got depressed. I kind of had like a mini panic attack in here. It's like, oh shit. I really can't go anywhere. Like, how the fuck am I going to date when I'm being quarantined? Do I go to virtual dates? I don't know how to do this. I'm new to the dating scene, so I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to really do? If you can help me out there, share, comments, please give me some ideas, because I'm at a total loss, because I'm not going to roll up to a stranger's house. Not doing that. So, yeah, that's my two cents.
My two cents has to do with this misquote of Trump that I just found hilarious, of him saying that people died they ain't never died before. Because I was like, this has to be hilarious that he's quoting Mr. Brown from Meet the Browns.
Wait, hold on. Mr. Brown said that?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
In the scene where he was like, you don't know who LeBron James is? Yeah, so I'm like, because, you know, everybody says that he had dementia. And so I'm like, what if, like, he's, like, just been binge-watching, like, BET?
And wait, just Trump has dementia?
Yeah, you haven't heard, like, people say he has dementia? That's why he says this crazy stuff.
Oh, no, he's just a Gemini.
But, like, like I'm, like, thinking, like, what if he just, like, started quoting, like, black movies, like, throughout, like, this presidency? Like, if, like, they're at, like, an NBC dinner or a UN dinner. And he just be like, you gonna eat your cornbread?
I can't.
I like at the impeachment, he would be like, all my life I had to fight.
Now that would be hilarious for him.
I would have liked that the next presidential debate, and he'd be like, nobody came to see you all this.
I can't.
I like they'd be like, okay, Bernie, what's your issues on black? What's your take on black issues? And Bernie says his piece. And then they Trump. Same question. Either they don't know, don't show, or don't care about what's going on.
What's wrong with you?
For real. I'm just thinking, like, that would just, to me, I find that hilarious. And then, like, just to end it all, like, when his presidency is over and they announce, like, the new president, and they walking through the White House, like, they passing by as he's leaving, you got the juice now.
Something's wrong with you.
I was brought into this world
on a rainy day. Now 24 years later, will the rain go away? It rains every single day, even in the same place. When I come in from the rain, you can see it in my face. They say when it rains, it pours. Of that, I'm sure. I think I see a ray of sunshine and it rains some more. But there's no clouds forming, no warning it seems. Sometimes it rains on the world, sometimes it rains on me. Sometimes I find it raining for nothing, the clouds get heavy. It rained the whole week that my grandmama left me. Sometimes it rains on good days, that's when you see a rainbow. The rain can be so cold, but you know it ain't snow. Sure, there comes a drought, a time when there's no rain, but you know it's coming when you start to feel pain. Rain, 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 please go away. Bring me sunshine and don't come back another day.
Rain down on me, just rain on me.
So today's episode, we're going to focus on our experience in therapy. Last week, No Sense touched on how important it was to think about people that are in quarantine, that are not in great situations, that may be dealing with something. So we thought it was a good idea to follow up with this topic. Both he and I have been diagnosed with depression in the past. And gladly, in the moment, we can say that we're currently in remission and we're thriving. But we still want to talk about that experience, so maybe we can help someone else out. So without further ado, we're going to go straight into it. So, No Sense, when did you first start with therapy?
I first started when I was younger, when I was a kid. My parents were going through a divorce. Mm. But I don't think that I really understood like what it was, because my parents didn't really have like a bad divorce. It just, you know, with certain things, people figure, oh, well, maybe, you know, he's acting out. So therapy really wasn't really a big issue when I was a kid. I didn't really, you know, understand what it was doing. I was diagnosed with ADHD, but my mom chose not to put me on medication.
What age were you? Are you wrong?
I was pretty young, but it never was an issue. Mm. I never had to take like a remedial class. I actually was in a lot of gifted classes.
Right.
So it never really was an issue as far as behavioral. As I grew older, then depression became more of an issue. And I never dealt with things. So I took a lot of loss. So I lost my cousin. He was 23. I was 22.
Wow.
A couple years later, I lost my grandma. During that whole time, I was in a long-term relationship. So I never really dealt with their deaths. Never went to their grave sites. Mm-hmm. When it got to the burial, never went to see that part. So they were both like really big losses. My cousin was sudden. It was a car accident.
Oh, God.
And so then when my relationship didn't work out, I pretty much, that's when I had to face like all my loss together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I end up ODing. And the only way that I would be able to be released out of the hospital was you need to go see somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing a therapist actually tell me, hey, you know, this isn't just a relationship.
Oh, like a one-off.
Yeah, this is... You haven't been learning. You haven't been able to deal with things throughout your whole life.
Mm.
And so that being able to, I actually moved on from that therapist,
mm-hmm.
and later got diagnosed with still having ADHD,
mm-hmm.
And finding out that depression is actually a symptom. You know, so it's not that I'm just depressed; it's also a symptom,
mm-hmm.
of ADHD. But knowing, being able to understand what's going on without being judged. Because a lot of people, you can talk to your friends and stuff, and they want to help, but nobody's been to school. They don't study the mind. They don't study the bodies of that nature. And they know you.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody not know you and just be able to vent and give you that positive, it was able to help me. So that's why I just continue to see a therapist.
Do you see a therapist now?
It's on a need, like an as-needed basis.
Mm-hmm.
I have a psychiatrist. Psychiatrists pretty much, they're like medicine people. They're there to prescribe you, make any changes. A therapist, counselor, those are the people that you're going to have your relationship with as far as, you know, what you're going through. So mine is kind of like on the on-call. Like whenever I feel like I'm going through something, he's there. When you have, like at the time that I was at my lowest, I'll probably see him like, if not every week, every 2 weeks.
Wow. That was like very profound of your parents to like set you up then, because you know you like at a young age to go to therapy. So I think that was a good thing, because transitioning, I think they were on the right track to transitioning to another phase in your life for having divorced parents. That was pivotal just to have support. So that was good on your parents' part.
It's good, but it was just, I don't think it was needed, because it wasn't like an ugly divorce. Like, you know, like I see a lot of stuff, but like, it's not like my dad left us or whatever. Like my dad was always in my life. So it wasn't, it's a lot of kids I see out that should have, but you know, I'm grateful that they thought enough to say, hey, this might be something that we can't, you know, we may have need some help, some outside help. So
yeah, that's I do good. Appreciate being it. A parent myself, like that definitely is something that I concern myself with, to make sure my children have support that's outside of my knowledge. I don't remember when I started. I think I started therapy in high school. I always say think, because I vaguely remember going to see a therapist. My dad got in a car accident, a really bad car accident, when he was paralyzed in 11th grade. And my aunt was trying to help us get, like, disability. So we went to go see a therapist. I think I went to go see a therapist. I just remember sitting at the mental... I remember, because the mental health place is down the street from my house where I grew up. And I remember being in there talking to somebody, but I didn't continue. I always thought that therapy was a good idea. So when I got divorced, I got my children into therapy, because it was a nasty, very nasty abusive relationship. And there was a lot of trauma. So I got them into therapy, and then I went myself. I used our EAP at work, and I went and saw this little white lady. She was the bomb. I liked it. Like, I liked her a lot, because I just felt validated, you know, in there, and having somebody hearing you and making you feel like you're not crazy. Because I at that point in my life, I really thought I was crazy. Like, yeah. I thought I was a batshit fool. Because, one, I stayed in a situation that I knew I shouldn't have been in longer than I should have. And that's it, really. And I just didn't know. I was lost. So I needed some type of guidance. So I went to therapy. And it was a good experience. I also went last year. Those are, I had a really bad and a low point in my life, and I was really lost. And I went last year just to, like, I didn't want to continue to feel that way. And I went to this black lady, and she helped me a lot. Again, made me feel like I'm not crazy. Because that's really, I started therapy because you don't want to burden other people with your problems. Like, I like to have control, and I like to appear as if I have it all together. And then I didn't feel strong enough to confide with everybody around me. So it's like, this stranger don't know who the hell I am. So let me just go dump all my problems on them. And they can't tell nobody. So just a bit, it's just good to feel validated. What did you, like, at one point did you ever, like, go through your triggers and find out, like, what it is that triggers your depression or anything?
My trigger is just a lot of, I'm pretty much like my main trigger, because I have such a, I hold, like...
Wait, hold on. No, that's a bar right there. Hold on. No, wait. You're your trigger. You're your own trigger. I think that's a bar, because that's taking accountability that you're the beginning and the end of everything.
Yeah, because I feel like... Because my trigger is, I feel like I'm the best at anything that I set my mind at doing.
Right.
I have to be the best at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so my trigger a lot of times was... when other people wouldn't see it, mm-hmm. I would feel like, why couldn't they see it? Why wouldn't they? So,
is it like a feeling of inadequacy?
Almost, but it was, and it wouldn't even be as if somebody told me you suck. Mm-hmm. I can pinpoint one time, I redid a song for somebody. The song that played earlier, I was 24. And so I was rapping when I was in my 20s. And I redid a song for someone, and I took a spin on it. And so the actual song was really a ratchet type sounding song, and I turned it more into a more conscious song. And so the guy who was working on it, his mom liked it and took it and said, hey, this is what Trey did on your song. And he flipped out. Like, ended up like
some artist shit.
Like, he ended up like, you know, this is trash. Like, and he wasn't upset with me. He was upset at the fact that he thought, and it was funny because exactly what I was feeling, what he was feeling, was he thought that she thought his stuff was not good. But she was just so impressed with what I was doing that she wanted him to hear it. And so how I was affected was, well, if he thought it was bad, then shit, it must have been horrible. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. So that was one of my triggers. And my triggers is always just loss. Mm-hmm. So anytime there's like a major loss, like I know I have to go into all of my coping mechanisms. I have to run to everything. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be death. It can be a friend moving away.
Great.
Just any type of great loss to where, you know, it's something that's not going to be in my daily life that's been a part of my life anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Of course, I have daddy issues. So being abandoned, it triggers the shit out of me. Because I pride myself being a dependable person. So if I already, like, look for people not to be dependable. And I think that's why I overcompensated being dependable to everybody. I remember in my last relationship, we had this situation. I always like kind of push people away, but then I was like, oh, we weren't seeing each other all the time, and I felt so alone. Like, I started acting the fuck out, and I was like, what? Like, I was like crying, calling them all the time, like. I'm over there flipping out. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I'm being abandoned all over again. And it triggered, like, I had to, especially in my relationships, I always find, like, I get triggered in my relationships. And I find out that, like, most people do. That's the whole purpose of the relationship, to grow. You get triggered, I get triggered. And then I feel so alone, like, I'm not worth being around. And it sucks. Like, I'm like, I got abandoned. Don't leave me. I seem tough, but I don't like being alone. And I've been, alone. I don't like being lonely. I don't like being, I get triggered when I'm dismissed. If I'm not heard, I'm a middle child. Like, I'm the oldest of my father's children, but out of my mom's children, I'm the kind of in the middle. I have two older siblings and two younger siblings. So I feel like a lot of the times,
you get ignored.
I get ignored because everybody thinks this Vic is all right because I'm self-sufficient. But I don't like feeling that way. It really bothers me. And it's been something that I had to work through. Also, like, emotional unavailability. Like, growing up, I always was like, I don't have feelings. I don't feel shit. My sister was like, you, so what do you mean, you crazy bitch? Like, everybody has feelings. I'm like, nah, I don't got no feelings. And then until I got into a relationship with somebody who was just as equally, if not more, emotionally unavailable, I was like, yo, what the fuck is going on? I remember crying to my sister, like, literally in tears, driving, crying. I was like, I'm so sorry for always not, like, validating your feelings, because it actually happened to me. And I was like, I don't like this. This bothers me really, really bad. And shutting down, so that it caused me to, like, get in touch with my emotions, and I still struggle, like, expressing them, because everybody think I'm, like, nonchalant, and I'm really, it's just, I don't know how to express my emotions. Also, like, unaccountability, which kind of ties into, like, the abandonment thing. Like, my apology language is, like, I have to hear you say that you're apologizing for specifically what you did. Otherwise, I'm flipping and I'm tripping. Like, I get angry. I'm very aggressive when I'm triggered. I'm either aggressive or I'm shutting all the way down. And you can't get anything out of me. I don't respond well. Also, let's see. Drunkenness. I don't like being around drunken people. Like, I can drink and have fun, but when you start getting belligerent and drunk, like, I saw that growing up. My dad, my grandfather was an alcoholic.
It just brings back that.
It brings back all that, the childhood, seeing my father. Like, I always say that, like, I have this, one of my earliest memories of my parents is my father beating on my mom. Mm-hmm. And I had to be in, like, maybe 4 or younger than 4, because my daddy and my mama didn't last very long. I don't recall him being there in kindergarten and taking me to school or anything. So it didn't last very long. But that's one of my early memories. And it's always, and my dad struggled to this day with addiction and dealing with his trauma. So, like, it always brings me back to that helpless little girl that couldn't, like, screaming and crying, trying to get my father and my mom to stop, well, my dad to stop beating on my mom. Those are, and stress. Stress is one of my triggers. I've done a lot with working with trying to figure out, like, what prioritizing so I won't have to deal with the stress. But stress is, like, I get distant, I get short.
Shut down.
I shut down or I'm lashing out. Those are my, that's how my triggers, like, manifest physically. I either lashing out or I shut down. And it's like no in between. With your diagnosis, I know I've been diagnosed with, like, mental, major depression and adjustment disorder last year. What are, like, and that, having that diagnosis, like, was like a light bulb for me, because it kind of validated what I've been feeling since I was a kid. Like, I think I've been dealing with depression since I was a child. I remember just these spouts of sadness and like this melancholy and not being able to verb, because I was quiet, I was reserved, I was obedient, so I didn't express myself. Just having that diagnosis, like, validated, it was like changing, it transformed me, because I was like, okay, so this is what I'm dealing with. Now I got to figure out how to overcome that. Like, what, I know you deal with depression. Like, what other, is that the, and I also have anxiety. Is there any other, like, things that, or when were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed with depression in my 20s. Mm. And then the ADHD, that actually came in my 30s. And that just, that's when, you know, that wasn't even with my therapist. That was talking with my PCP, just about.
So when you were diagnosed when you were a kid, did they not, like, so there was no, like, follow-up when you were a child?
No, it was just, let's give him medicine.
And then that was it?
Yeah, and my mom, no, we'll work through this. She didn't, you know, you see these kids out here and they're zombie kids. She didn't want that. And this was way, you know, I'm 36 now, so this is way before they really knew
how to adjust the medication.
Well, not that, but just have programs in the schools for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
As I grew older,
when
you think of ADHD, you just think of it as kids. So when ADHD, the symptoms aren't, it's not hyper no more, mm-hmm. because you're older, of course, but your attention span is still, you know, limited. And so at work, I would do things, but I was very, very bored. No matter, you know, I could just get a promotion and I got a new job, but I learned like that. And it just, 2 weeks in, it's like, okay. And so, you know, I would speak with my manager and supervisor, and it's like, we can't complain about your quality of work. It's just, you're up. You know what I'm saying? Like, and so, you know, that's when I was actually diagnosed, and that's when I knew that it, you know, depression does coincide with it. It has anxiety with it. Mm-hmm. So I've never actually been diagnosed with anxiety. It's more of a, like a sub-diagnosis under ADHD.
Yeah. Major adjustment disorder, major depression and anxiety for me. It's funny that you say that because I relate. I haven't been diagnosed with ADHD, but I relate. And I don't know if that's a Sagittarius thing also because, you know, we kind of like run straight ahead and like, oh, we on to the next. And once we got our conquest, it was like, okay, I need to do something else. And that I do the same thing at work. Like, I got a promotion just like 2 weeks ago and I'm already bored. I'm like, I need something else.
Yeah. And so, and, you know, and that's the thing is, you know, what's crazy is the fact that when, you know, as when you're kid, you know, when you hear about people saying, oh, just put them on medicine and stuff like that. Mm. Like, soon as I took like this little test basically in my doctor's office. Mm. And she said, okay, yeah, it looks like you have ADHD. Mm. But of course, she can't diagnose me not being a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. So she referred me to a psychiatrist. You know, talked to me, had maybe a 20-minute conversation, got me in with a counselor who mm-hmm. not only was specialized, but he had it himself. Mm-hmm. So not only was he able to communicate with me as far as knowing about it, but being that he had it, but it was so fast. And it's, you wouldn't, you know, when you're going through something like that, you don't think that the help is like, oh, well, you know, I'm this old and I have this. It's, you know, it's not going to be like, nah, it was mainly within a couple of days to where I was able to see somebody to talk about it. Mm. So, you know, the help is out there.
So, that moves on to our next question is about medication. So, you think that medication helped you a lot?
Well, I'm only able to take depression meds. Mm-hmm. I can't take too many ADHD meds because I have a heart condition. So, ADHD, a lot of them are stimulants, and a lot of the good ones are stimulants. So they coincide with what I take. But when I did try to take them, people at like my work, you know, they would say, well, you do a whole lot more work, but the person you are, I do not like. Mm-hmm. You know, it was hanging by. That was it. There was no small talk. There was no, right. How are you doing? It was, you ask me a question, I give you the answer, and that's it.
Please kinda go like back. Took your personality.
Yeah. Okay. So I actually, at the time, my supervisor was like, you know, maybe, you know, days where we are light, where, you know, we have light staff or we're coming in on overtime and we just need to catch up on work. Maybe those are days you can take it, but I really prefer because I feel like as our team, they need you to be more, you know, personable and approachable.
Yeah.
And it, to me, as you know, if my job is okay with it, and that was my main concern anyway, was my function, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't have it as far as the depression. You got to think about the side effects that come with it. It's a medicine is always going to be it's kind of a testing thing, mm-hmm. you know. Not all medicine works with everybody's chemistry.
Right.
Some medicine, I've taken Cymbalta and it caused me to like have suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a game of, okay, will this work? Will this not? You know, so I got to a medicine where it worked, but then, you know, my libido. So I'm not as sexually active as I used to be, which is probably good. So I can't be a nasty hoe.
So, you a big asshole. You was an irresponsible hoe. I can't.
And that's because I'm more or less clinically depressed, and so it's a body makeup. So.
So what's the difference? I guess it's for the listeners. We were talking about this before the show, trying to figure out what's the difference between regular major depression, what I was diagnosed with, and his clinical depression. And go ahead, I want you to speak.
Well, you can have major depression and be clinically depressed, but the biggest difference is situational depression. Mm. Clinically depressed is you may have had a traumatic experience that you never dealt with, and over time, it caused your body or your brain to not get enough of the chemicals to have the balance of where you're supposed to have normally to function. Or it can be hereditary, which is, in my case, my mother is depressed. And so for a lot of people, regular coping mechanisms aren't enough. And so you end up having to take medication to add those receptors, you know, that's for your brain to have.
For you, that's your experience.
Yeah. And so that's the only reason why the depression meds were a must, because no matter what, you know, even though I did the coping mechanism, the thoughts were always kind of there. And so it eliminated that. So that's pretty much the biggest difference between clinical. It's more or less clinical and situational. And everybody gets depressed. But I think the thing is figuring out whether it's situational, because situational, you can cope with it. It can be fixed, you know. Clinical is, yeah, it's going to take therapy. It's going to take lifestyle changes. You know, it's going to be something like addiction where you're going to have to continue to work on it.
I don't take medication. And just hearing your story and just hearing your experience makes me think, like, I do have clinical depression. I kind of stopped going to therapy because of the cost. But I'm a knowledge seeker, so I try to find out as much information as I can. That's why I wanted you to speak on that further. Because I've had spouts, like, even as a child, like, spouts are just sadness for no apparent reason. And for in my 30s, because all my 20s, I was in a situation, and no disrespect to the person I was in a relationship with, but it was an abusive relationship. And I say no disrespect now because I'm past that. We shouldn't have been together. Like, we were too young and it was just kids, just trauma bonding. Like, I had daddy issues, he had mommy issues. It was a disaster.
Future podcast.
It was definitely a disaster waiting to happen. But I heard the stories. I read up on medication. And even now, if I get my cycle, I don't take medication for it. I like to be in control of my body. And one of my coping mechanisms was going through my spiritual journey. And I learned about meditation and yoga and everything. And like, I'm not my body. My body, I control everything. So that was just out of the question for me. Even if they suggested that I take medication, I wasn't going to do it.
But like you had just mentioned, you stopped going because it was getting expensive.
Yeah.
A lot of people, that's why they use medication. Mm-hmm. Because if you have insurance or you have, you know, some type of assistance with medication, your medication may be $2-3 to fill that medication a month.
Right.
But you're going to see a psychiatrist, a therapist, it's going to cost you a copay every time you go. So you're talking about maybe anywhere from 20 to 60 some odd dollars. And if you don't have insurance,
my plan, no insurance,
you know, you paying $100 and some a visit. So
yeah,
a lot of people are like, I can't afford to see somebody, so yeah, just give me those meds and I'll deal with it like that.
And that's the difference between a therapist, psychologist. There's a difference.
A psychiatrist is a medication doctor. Psychologist is a person who's going to deal with the actual issues,
talk therapy
and coping,
and other type of therapy. Medication was, because even now I have moments of I wake up and I'm like, I'm just in a funky ass mood, and I'm like, I'm so good, but I have to talk myself down, just like off the ledge. I can like mentally see myself on the lit on this big high ledge in the sky, and like, oh, about to jump. I gotta run and jump. It manifests in my relationship when I'm like jumping to conclusion. I want to argue and some shit like that. Nah, it's like, calm down, take it back. You have everything you need. You're okay. There's nothing going on in your life that was gonna cause this. Yeah, you just in this moment, you just feel sad. Deal with it. Be in the moment, and it is gonna pass. So,
and I just want to add to my counselor made a very valid point one day. If you are suggested a medicine or a medication and you feel as if that's something you don't want to do, you don't have to do it.
Right.
A doctor is, you're paying them for a service for yourself. So if they're telling you to do something that you think is not good for you, you can go somewhere else.
Right. And get a second opinion or a third opinion or do what's best for you.
And that's exactly what he told me. He said, you know, do you feel like you need this medication? Because you're the one that's paying for this.
Right.
So if you want to do something else, you tell me right now and we can go. So, you know, remember that in the back of your mind that you are paying for this service for yourself.
Correct. Health.
So, you know, always know that medication, it can be an answer, but it's not the only answer.
True. Yeah, because I guess I get my gumption from my grandma and my grandfather. She's been a caretaker for my grandfather for maybe 13. I don't know. It's been a minute. And if something, because the doctors swore that he wasn't gonna last this long, she kind of take it upon herself. Like, she takes care of this man every day. She knows him better than the doctors. Even though the doctors see him every once a month, every 6 months, you got to understand that you know what's best for you. For me, medication is not good for me. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't take medication. It's good for no sense, because that's what he needs. You just have to know yourself. And I'm very in tune because of the lifestyle that I live and the choices that I make and the knowledge that I've gained. I know that I have more control over myself than, and self-awareness of myself than maybe average people do. Like, I can feel myself ovulate and it's weird. Like,
I can't feel myself ovulate.
I hope not. I digress. We already talked about family history. Like, I know you said your mom has dealt with depression. I kind of touched on my father dealing with addiction and trauma. Is there anybody else in your family that has dealt with depression or anxiety or any type of mental conditions that you know of?
No, I know of. I have an aunt. She went through major depression. But that was due to a loss of her husband. Mm. But other than that, nothing like where it's clinical history as far as like that. And my dad's side of the family is that old school mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, we gonna get through it, you know, that mm-hmm. type. So if it is, I haven't seen anything or heard anything like that. About there's not any stories. It's like, you know, your great uncle was in a crazy house and, you know what I'm saying, he thought it was, you know, a clown and it's like, you know, nothing like that. So yeah. But there's no other stuff like that.
For me, I think like I have mental health is like really prevalent in my family, especially on my dad's side of the family. I'm more close on my dad's side of the family than my mom. My mom was a cougar. she was a cougar. My dad's like 10 years her junior. So me and my sister, when she had with my dad, we were on the younger end of the cousins and everything. And my mom was the youngest also. So all of my family on her side are like much older. And it's just like me, my sister, and my cousin, like all in the same age bracket. So I don't really know what they dealt with, but I do know that when my mom was diagnosed with leukemia, she definitely went through depression and anxiety. That's just like, of course she did. You know, she wanted to, I didn't say necessarily kill herself, but she didn't. She had suicidal thoughts that she shared with me, and she definitely dealt with depression before she later transitioned. And that was traumatizing for all of us. My dad has dealt with addiction most of my life. And I think that's addiction is just a symptom of something trauma. I always joke with my sister. I was like, something happened in that house. I don't really know. Yeah. We don't know really. Because daddy has mommy issues. Like, he's the oldest and he definitely has mommy issues. And my granny's great. So there's nothing to take away from her. But I think that and my aunt also, she's diagnosed with bipolar. And I know my cousins, like, I'm the oldest out of all my dad's side of the cousins, and all of us have dealt with some type of trauma, as children, whether it's a lot. My family has been through a lot, so mental health is always talking about it, and like even having like other family members kind of call, like my grandmother said, like kind of crazy. Like we it was very something. It was a lot that we talked about. Not as much as like as I wish we had for production, like productivity, but it was something that was always in the conversation about depression, bipolarism, alcoholism, drug abuse, like all the symptoms of trauma. Like I said, the earliest memory I have of my parents being together, not just like we're going on a trip or something. Like, no, the first memory I can remember now is my dad beating on my mom. And maybe that's what the trauma was that kind of went throughout my childhood, because we never really talked about it afterwards. My mom really didn't mention my dad growing up. So I had to deal with that. Like, I didn't see her in any type of relationship after that until I was like in middle school, because she dealt with abuse from her husband previous to my father, because my father was a boy toy that should have just and turned into two children 18 months behind each other. Like, and she was married prior to that. She had to deal with abuse then. So abuse was definitely something that abuse, addiction, bipolar, depression, all of these things were like, that's my lineage. I don't want to say that's my lineage, but that's something that's been prevalent in my life from the beginning. I've even experienced physical, mental, financial, emotional, spiritual abuse in my relationships. And my children, I know they will definitely have to go to therapy get older, because they've seen some shit also. And I laugh at it because I'm uncomfortable. That's the reason
why I'm laughing. I do want to touch on something that you said. When your mom had leukemia. I do remember when I had my heart attack. That was a big thing too. Rehab counseling was like your physical therapy, and then you had mental therapy, because a lot of people, when they face a very traumatic experience, that's what they want. They want to control your mental health too, because that is part of your recovery.
Right. I don't recall, because I went with her. My sister, I went with her because I was dealing with my own abuse and mental health issues. I kind of like had to I separated myself from. But my sister, I don't recall like she seeing a psychiatrist or a therapist at all. I don't know why she didn't. But she had hellified good insurance. Like, she worked for the federal government. So, I don't know why. Or maybe she just felt like she didn't need to. I don't know. But, yeah, that would have been... That should have been in place.
Yeah, and I mean, and to be honest, like, you know, and I understand, like, because I don't have a family. But, you know, when somebody who is made a patriarch, such as your mother, or something, it has to be something in place for the family, because that person is not going to be, you know, not only physically not going to be able to carry the burden, but mentally they're not going to be able to, because they're battling that.
Most definitely. That took a toll on the whole family.
And see, I was okay. I was fine. Because, you know, I didn't have any long-lasting damage to my heart or nothing like that. And, you know, there was not a moment that I think I was in my room where somebody wasn't in there who cared about me. So, you know, my thing was, I'm ready to go back to work. Right. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, and then I was the youngest person on that floor. So there was a lot of older people, you know, and as you get better and you walk around, you like, some of these people aren't going to make it. And so, like, when you see people who worked at that's gloomy. Yeah, you know, and so it's like, I hope, like, their spouse is going to be okay, or their kids that visit them. Like, I hope that they're going to be okay. And, you know, for the most part, they only care about that patient. They don't care about those other people in that room.
Yeah. I even think about, like, back with my mom. Speaking, like, I don't know if she ever dealt with therapy or anything, but I even, like, just going after she's transitioned now, I go back and, like, because I like to find the root. I think our childhood is, like, the framework, is our foundation, our framework of how we're going to be as adults. And whatever you're going through then, you it kind of like manifests itself repeatedly throughout your childhood until you kind of like learn how to deal with it. And I know my mom's dad died when she was 11, so I'm just thinking like my son just turned 12 in November. Like I can only imagine what that's going to do to a child at 11 to deal with like the loss of the grief of losing their parent. Because at 24, maybe 20s, I don't know, I was in my 20s. Kamari was like one. So 25, maybe my mom died. And that I took a hit. Like, I just last year finished grieving from, and I don't even think I finished grieving. Like, last year I actually dealt with the death of her 5 years later. Actually, that wasn't last year, the year before last. 5 years later, dealing with their death, like, and actually grieving and going through.
Well, I don't think emotions. You really can. I think parents and children, losing those, I just don't see how people get, like really get over. You never really get over that.
Yeah, grief is definitely, like, a symptom, or even, like, a, not even a symptom. It's, like.
It's a trigger.
That's a trigger. Yeah. Like, it's for real. Like, and like, what do you think? Like, that's the sign of depression. Like, what are some signs of depression you think? For you, at least.
A sign of depression is if you can't get in touch with me.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you get sent the voicemail, if you don't get a text back, if like not showing up at work. Like, if that FMLA use, like, that's, yeah.
So it's just, isolation.
Yeah, isolation. Just the things that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Doing. Yeah.
If I'm not doing those things anymore, that's when you know, like.
Yeah. Like, people, like, food, a lot of people, they eat.
Yeah, I don't eat. Either.
I don't eat when I'm
depressed. I eat everything.
So, like, when I went through my real big depression, I lost, like, 30 pounds. And people were like, oh, my God, like, you must work. No. This was, like, 30 pounds in, like, a month.
Damn.
Like, no, this was not healthy at all. I wasn't eating things. You know, like, I think I was, like, drinking beer and pissing it out. That was the only type of what was going into my body. So,
see, me and Trey have known, me and those have known each other for a few years now. Maybe what? Four or five years now, and I remember him going through his a moment of depression, and I remember him, I'm like, have you eaten? He was like, I drank a beer. Like, no, like, that's not what I asked you, my dude. Like, my nigga's like, that's not it. Like, yeah, just checking on him, because I know the symptoms, like, that eating is definitely a coping mechanism. Like, I emotionally eat. You would think now that I'm depressed because I've gained so much weight, it's just I don't have time to exercise. Like, I'm not depressed, anybody. Usually I gain weight. Like, when I had my first son, I definitely gained a whole lot of weight, and I retained that for years.
And that's what I'm saying. It's different. Some people gain it. Some people lose it. Mm-hmm. It's just the habits that we form. Some people, they eat out of comfort. You know, it becomes a comfort. But see, I'm not a snacky person anyway.
No,
so.
I eat meals. I eat meals, and I eat all of it. Even if I'm not hungry, I overeat.
I think, like, sex. Like, I think either you're having a lot of empty sex, or if you're, like, in a relationship, you can go through the motions of everything, but you're not actually having sex.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just too much to put into it. And you don't have the emotion in you to give.
You're right. My libido is already high. And, yeah, I definitely could attest to that. Like, I have to. Like, I can't go the whole I've tried. Like,
I mean,
when I attempted to do the whole celibacy thing. And it didn't work out because I didn't know how to get the emotions out. So, I was finding risky sex at that. It's like, don't know. Like, I even had a situation where I was assaulted because I'm invited. Yeah, I was physically, not even sexually assaulted because I'm having some recent sex with inviting somebody in my house that I don't know. And because I was empty and I needed to not feel.
And then once it's over, it's like,
that's what it. What can you do?
Yeah, it's back to being depressed again.
Right.
20 minutes for what?
Right. That, I think abusing drugs. Like, I remember when I was a relationship. Like, I tell people, I joke and laugh. Like, the only reason why my relationship lasted that long is because I was high. Like, I abused. Thank God I don't. I'm not doing that now. But I like every day get off work. I'm blowing down to the wee hours in the morning. This is like a routine. Weekends, I'm high the entire time. Nobody knew. I was a functioning. I get that honest from my parent, my father. I'm a functioning addict. Like, I was addicted. Like, I remember a point where I was like, it was 3 bottles of wine by my bed when after my divorce. Like, you need to slow the fuck down, man.
Yeah, I remember my mom would come to my house and she would just start opening blinds up and cleaning, and like she would go to like pick up the trash bag and all you hear click 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 click. It was just bottles.
Oh my god.
It was nothing but like bottles, because it was just bottles of like Bud Light Platinum and, you know, just Goose, just,
yeah,
you know. And I do know you remember the text message that just did not make sense.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I remember calling your mom. It's like, T Rosa, something's going on with. You need to go check on him because I'm worried.
And it's like, because you don't want to go nowhere.
Yeah.
But it's the substances, they take you away from
it. It's numbing it.
Yeah. And it's like, eventually I'm going to fall asleep and I'm not going to have to deal with it for now. You know, so.
Yeah.
But it's very unhealthy.
Yeah, excessive crying for me. Like, I just doing nothing, driving down the road. The next thing I'm bawling, like, and I'm having a fucking panic attack because I can't.
Or like breathe. Something stupid, like a song, and you don't know why. Like, right. This song don't have no fucking meaning to nothing.
Oh my gosh, yes, that me, and also aggression. Like I said, I'm aggressive or I'm shut down. Like, I don't really have I'm learning middle ground, but now. I used to just be, like, ready to lash out. Like, my kids, I remember before I went to therapy, this wasn't last year, 2018, actually. I was so depressed. I was so lost, and I did not know what the hell to do. And I lashed out at my kid for doing what kids do at school. Sent his ass off to live with his daddy. I was like, I can't do this. And I was trying to send both of them, but he couldn't take care of both of them. But I was like, I just couldn't. It was a cry out for help. But nobody was around to help me. I didn't allow anybody to help me. I didn't say, okay, this is it. I cannot. And then, like, that, it was the end of my relationship. I was ending the relationship also. It was just too much. And that's what caused me. It was like, I can't feel like this anymore. I need to go back to therapy.
And to be honest, like, one big thing is, like, just stopping any of your routine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I give, like, and there's certain people, like, they're unsung heroes in your life, and they do things and they don't even know. But I don't think we've talked about it here, but I'm part of Wildlock Columbia, which we do every month at the Comedy House.
Mm-hmm.
And the one of the guys who produces, which is our coach, his name is Corey. I went through about 3 months where I wasn't showing up to rehearsals. I wasn't doing shows, but he would always say, like, what's going on? Like, even, like, I would be like, I come to this show, you know, and he like, all right, well, you know, I'll make a pass. You can, like, I, you know, like, they have a rule where, you know, you don't come, you don't rehearse, you know. But so I wouldn't have, like, a big part of the show, but he might, like, add me in one of the game, like, put me on. And so one time it just really got to a lot. And I just was like, I'm not sure. And, you know, I worked through it, and He saw me somewhere, and he was like, you ready to come back? And I said, yeah. He was like, I was hoping you would say that. And just the fact that he left that open and the communication was there. Because a lot of people would be like, well, whatever, yeah, like, you got to go. But
yeah, I remember having somebody in my life was like, I can't wait till you're back to who you were. And I was like, bro, I might have beat your ass. Like,
yeah, and that's the thing, like, people don't understand, like,
you don't even have an idea of what I'm going through in my brain right now.
But it's not like, it's not the people, because
it's not their fault.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's like when you like if I come and I say, hey, how you doing, and we just pass, you don't really care how I'm doing.
After my mom died, I hated that question. And to this day, I don't ask, like, how you doing? I just do it to be funny if I am doing it. But I don't, because you don't really want to know.
Yeah.
Or I say something off the wall. I was like, I don't know.
But it's the people that pull you aside and say, yo, those are the people that make those hard times. They kind of help you pull out.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's a girl at my job who, I don't know. It's from the moment she got to my department, me and her just had this like connection of we were just friends from the get go, and she's going through something, and I still don't know what she's going through. I just learned from experience, like, you don't ask you just have to let people know that you're there for them.
Yeah.
And she told me, like, last week, it almost had me in tears, like, how much she appreciate because I'm not trying to be nosy,
right?
You know, and that's what it is. When we're going through things, people just want to know that there's somebody that cares. So, like you said, did you eat today?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to ask somebody, how do you feel every day?
How you doing?
Yeah, but just say, hey, or yo, I just saw this and I thought about you. Mm-hmm. Something to let people know that, you know, the world is going on, but you still on my mind.
Right.
But I'm not going to sit here and try to say that I fix it, because I can't.
Yes. You can't. If you're dealing with somebody with mental health issues, you cannot fix them. There's nothing. Don't go be a cat and save a hole and try to make it better for them. I did that. It doesn't work. You will get your ass beat, probably. But, like, and we want to talk about this later, but it's essential to have relationships like that, that people are aware of what you're going through and know how to respond to that. Because everybody in my circle has dealt with mental health, like, are aware of their mental health issues and their setbacks, and know they have coping mechanisms. They know how to be sensitive to the situation. And they're open to hear me, to validate me, to listen to me. Like, I have, even you, like, you, I wrote something down. I remember, because I kept, because of my father's addiction, and my grandfather and my uncle and everybody in my family have a long list of, even my mom deal with addiction. I always, like, I stamped that on myself and branded myself. Like, oh, I have addictive personality. And you was like, I don't have addictive personality. I just have an obsessive personality. And I was like, yo, that's me. And that's really one of the reasons how I overcame the depression. I was, like, right around my divorce, because I think we got really close around that time too. Because I didn't allow, I'm not letting any label, I'm not, that's not me. Like, I know that I can stop smoking. And I did. Like, I wasn't nothing like, oh, let me just hit it and everything. Just one day I was like, okay, I'm not going to.
Yeah, we don't have, stop. There's no withdrawal symptoms.
Right. I mean, no, I did have withdrawal, because the dreams and shit was like, because you know you're high, you ain't dreaming. Yeah. Like, or you not remembering your dreams. The dreams, I had the withdrawal, and every now and again I wanted to help, but I just stopped.
You don't have to, for us, it's not like we have to go, that's not what we need counseling for.
Right.
You know,
right?
It was just okay. This energy that I was putting into this, let me put it into something productive.
Right, right.
So yeah, like I've always said, like, you know, and I did that with, and I don't just do that with bad stuff either. Mm-hmm. But there'll be times where I'll be like, okay, I'm just not gonna drink anything for this month, right. Or I'm just not gonna, you know, be on social media for a month. Like, it's just certain things I have to put myself, you know, and just to make sure that I still have willpower.
Yeah, and even for me now, because before I remember I was like, I had no control over my sex drive, and now I'm like, I'll masturbate. Like, I don't need, like I recognize that I have the desire to be fulfilled and have an orgasm, and it is a release. It's a release for me, especially when I'm stressed out. I got to have an orgasm, but I don't necessarily have to go find somebody to do it with. Like, now, I still don't go, like, months. I'm not saying I'm celibate. I love sex, and I'm going to have sex when I want to have sex, but it's not a necessary need now. Like before, I was like, I have to have sex, and I'm going to find any random person that's willing. Like, let's go. Like, let's go. But now it's not even that. Like even my bestest friend in the whole entire world. Oh my gosh, she's my backbone. She sees me. She's my Gemini. She can articulate her emotions. Anything that I feel, I could just spit out a little bit, and then she just so eloquently just tell me everything about me. I'm like, yo, I wish I could express myself the way that you can. And she, oh my God, I've known her all my motherfucking life. That's my ride or die, Niecy. Check her out. She got wax beads and everything. I'll put her the handle somewhere. But, yeah, that is my longest relationship outside of my family. My family they're my long-term lifetime relationships, but her, that's been a friend from jump. And I, like, even for men to have you, and then I have another friend, like, just validating me, seeing me from before I was really depressed, and just talking to me and talking me down. I remember my homeboy, shout out to Rick Doe, told me, even though I said I wasn't gonna say no names, he said, what did he say one time? You gotta stay on top of what's beneath you and in front of what's behind you. And that quote helps me to this day. Like, I can't just allow stuff to just take me down. I gotta be able to deal with it. I gotta use my coping mechanisms to work through it. Like, those relationships, that, like, you have to cultivate your relationships. Even if you don't want to be with anybody, you want to be alone, you go, it's been a month and you ain't been out with your friends, like, you need to go. Those relationships are, it's important, because you have to have that companionship, because we, even though we come in this world with just us and our mother, like, we die by ourselves. Like, we are humans, we have to be able to bond with each other.
So that was part one of our discussion about mental health. You can join us next week for part two. Also, we'll have our spotlight and our top five ways of how we cope individually with mental health and getting over our depression. So join us again next week. Hope you enjoy. And please, again, subscribe, share, and rate us. Thank you.
Believe in yourselves. Dream. Try. Do good.
Don't you mean do well?
No, I mean do good. Do good.